Hello, and welcome to the DeFi Daily, a 10-minute or less DeFi and crypto update. I'm Amy, here with Pat, and today is Thursday, October 29th, 2020.
Bitcoin is down about 0.5% to 13,223. Gosh, I feel like I watch it all day long, and then we go to do the show, and it suddenly like drops. I don't know. I feel like there's a curse around it. Ethereum also is down about 2.5% to 3,382, and it was hovering around 4,405 today. So market's off a little bit. And that goes for pretty much all the markets. Everyone is pretty unhappy right now.
All right. Well, up first, let's thank our sponsor, Bitwave. Bitwave is a digital asset management platform that does DeFi investment monitoring, token tax tracking, gain loss reporting, and more. You can check them out online at bitwave.io or on Twitter at Bitwave Platform. So first, the biggest story is that leaked documents reveal Binance's elaborate scheme to evade Bitcoin regulators.
Yeah, so this is super interesting. Binance is one of the big boys. They've been around since 2017, one of the biggest exchanges in the world by pure volume. People really like them. They have a pretty good interface, but they also just have really high liquidity and incredibly fast market making and trading. So put all that together, they've been pretty popular. They were not adhering to KYC AML laws for a very, very long time. What they would do is they basically set up what I think you could only call a incredibly lax geofencing firewall that basically said if you were coming from a IP address in the US, you could not create a Binance.com account. So what people did is they used VPNs to look like they were coming from literally anywhere else in the world besides a very obviously US IP address, and that's how they ended up getting around it. Fast forward, they wanted to expand to the US market and put together the semblance of appearing to be a legitimate exchange. And that's where this whole shenanigans, I guess, has really come from today. The issue comes from when you set up a structure like this, you want to do it in such a way that you are insulating the two different entities basically if one of the entities is doing something that is probably illegal or at least questionable in the United States, and that would be the Binance parent company, you want to set things up in a way that it is sheltered from the activity, that if you set up in a Binance.us, which is what they went and built, that it is, they're sort of disjunct companies that you can't really go after the Binance.us people for the ills of the Binance people itself. This is not the first time this has been an issue. I remember very well the online poker structures of the early 2000s, I guess you would say, back when online poker was illegal in the States. They would do very similar things. Like poker was illegal in the United States, so you could not create a entity in the US that could have people playing online poker. But a lot of people in America are incredibly industrious and like to make money, so they would still want to build these technologies. So what some of the companies out there did was they would set up an entity in somewhere like Malta that would be the entity that would, people would go and sign up for. They would still do the development work in the United States, and then they would license it to that entity in Malta. There would be ownership overlap, but you generally would not have one be a subsidiary of the other. So it was really two very distinct entities. So that's what Binance essentially went and tried to do. And the Tai Chi documents that got released, Project Tai Chi was their name for this overarching mechanism to basically stay out of trouble with US regulators. What they ended up doing was setting up a Binance.us organization that then was licensing the software from Binance, corporate in China or Japan or Malta, wherever it's located. Gaming companies, the poker companies got in trouble, and where I think that Binance may perhaps get in trouble, a little bit has to do with these structures that, the governments are relatively sophisticated about this. I mean, even though you set up different entities does not mean that they are truly different. So one of the tricks that people would do is they would basically say, we're licensing this software to you for $11 billion. Like they'd make up a number. And so you essentially, the subsidiary corporation or the sister corporation would end up feeling very much like a subsidiary corporation because of these structures that were set up between the organizations. So it looks kind of like Tai Chi was designed around there, was to basically set up a licensing scheme between the Binance US and the Binance main office, where essentially Binance US would forever be paying more or less all their profits out to the other entity. The other piece that was really interesting is that you really don't want to have on paper. I mean, it's surprising to me that this presentation ever got made. The Forbes did this article. I trust the Forbes reporter. You know, if this was Cointelegraph or someone like that, you know, maybe you would question it. But you trust Forbes' fact checkers to go and do the due diligence on this. So what they put on paper that they really should not have is things like, you know, work with regulators, but never actually get regulated. So like, you know, they basically put, you know, work with the SEC in the efforts of being compliant or of being kind of a regulated exchange, but never actually get regulated. They kind of put this stuff into writing. They say, you know, be really active with the self-regulatory bodies, but never, you know. And so you start to look at that, and it's super shady. I mean, it is, you know, if they had it put it in writing, if it had just been the corporate structure, that's one thing. But because they put all this stuff in writing about like pretending to play nice and not really caring. And then, you know, they had whole sections of their website dedicated to VPN usage, ostensibly for them to increase security. But really it was so that people in the United States could get around their firewall. And lots of people did. I mean, I know many, many, many people who have Binance accounts. It's not uncommon. So this is sort of a huge issue. I don't think there's going to be, I mean, I think it's a really bad day for the Binance US people. I think there's probably going to be, you know, if you think back to the poker days, it was the same thing. They set these structures, they felt pretty confident. And then one day getting off a plane in New Jersey, people just start getting arrested. So like, I think that there's certainly the possibility that similar things happen. Depends how illegal, if there was anything they were doing that was really questionable, which I'm not sure there is. I mean, the thing that's most questionable from the SEC's perspective probably is their BNB issuance. And they tried, you know, they did put a somewhat good faith effort in to not sell it to U.S. citizens. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I don't think they're really going to completely go away. But obviously, this is on top of, you know, the, you know, CZ from Binance is also related to the OK coin, which is also then related to OKX. Like this stuff is all kind of interrelated. The shadiness is all super interrelated here. So that's another layer here that I don't know. One of these days when we're feeling like doing a long show, we'll do some actual research and dive into a special episode just about the crazy interrelatedness around there.
All right. Well, that's super interesting. Yeah. We'll have to wait and see. So next, let's discuss what Cointelegraph was calling the dilemma of reissuing lost or frozen DeFi tokens.
Yeah, so we'll tweet this out. There was basically about two different things. The big issue was, and we talked about this a little bit when it first happened, when there was the big KuCoin hack. The KuCoin hack was super interesting because it was one of the first hacks that I had seen that really focused on tokens. Like most of the big hacks recently have been around, or I mean, in the history of crypto, have been around Bitcoin or Ethereum. There is literally nothing you can do to reissue Bitcoin. That is not a thing. It is physically impossible. Ethereum did it. There was, you know, with the DAO, there was a point at which a lot of money was lost. And what they did is they actually forked off, corrected it, and then kept going. You couldn't do that today. I don't think. I think it'd be very, very difficult to get away with that today. But with tokens where it's just owned by one little, or it's owned or controlled by one little group, you know, maybe you can kind of get away with it. There's two parts of it. One is some of them are done in a not super centralized way. Like they basically create a new contract for the token, move over the ownership that everyone else had with just a few little modifications. And then it's up to people to kind of opt into the new token. I don't mind that. I think it's a good model. I think it's a really good model for this whole thing, which is to say like, hey, you know, we're going to fork it. We as the team are going to fork it. We're going to change our UIs to use the fork. So really we're going to put a pretty drastic like effort on it. But, you know, honestly, if the community hated what they were doing, they would be able to step back and just do it. Now, the fact that they can do this obviously creates centralization problems. What will happen is over time, when you have more and more Zappers and other Enzerions and other interfaces into contracts, it'll become more and more difficult to actually do this. But it is really interesting that the team has been able to do it now. It's sort of a nice benefit of the project being small, and it's not always an indicator of the centralization of the project. That's, I think, kind of what I'm trying to get at here. So super interesting. It's a brave new world, and it is nice to see the industry trying to self-regulate a little bit on some of these things.
All right. Well, that'll do it for today. Thank you for listening to the DeFi Daily.
Man, only two stories. All right. We'll do better next time. Bye, everybody.